Committee to order, Monday, March 2nd. We will start with public comments. If there is anyone that would like to make any public comments concerning anything, this is the first ever meeting of the Flood Resilience Committee, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay, well, good. Any public comments by anyone? Hearing none, seeing none. We will start into information on flood resiliency actions. Can we go just for my benefit first?
Sure.
What is this? What's flood resilience mean? Are we talking about? Help me.
Slide number two.
Okay, thank you.
I'll get you there. Good afternoon, and thank you. I'm honored to be here to present to your first ever committee meeting. I am going to go through a quick definition of resiliency, something that staff looks at and uses, go through an overview of our flooding, review sort of our water, rainwater vulnerability, disruptive events, and some of the programs and tools that we currently have in place. And then I was asked to give a brief update on two of our projects, some of which you may have heard earlier today. So over the past many years, the town has had a hazard mitigation plan, so a plan on how we would try to mitigate different hazards that we are vulnerable to. And you hear recently the word resilience has come into play. And from staff's perspective, we kind of use this definition up top, which is the ability to anticipate, absorb, adapt to, and rapidly recover from a disruptive event. So it is not just hazard mitigation has become a tool, and resiliency is the mindset that you set up for long-term success from disruptive events. But you are certainly welcome to come up with your own definition, I think, as you move forward. So in Mount Pleasant, we are using the concept of watersheds to look at how water moves across our land when it rains. Specifically, these are the areas that we have defined to date. They do not respect neighborhoods, so neighborhoods may be split between different watersheds and have different characteristics, both of soils and their ability to absorb different types of water-based events. And we don't currently have the modeling of how our town reacts when it rains, but it is something that the staff is working on and working on trying to obtain some grants to get that type of information together. But we do have all of our historical reports of where we have rainfall-based flooding complaints. Another area that we look at flood issues to build resiliency into our program is our vulnerability to storm surge. So the map you see here is from our comp plan. We have some different colored blues in here, but the sort of mid-color blue represents about a 10-foot surge inundation model, so something similar to Hurricane Hugo. So as a part of how we're building into our town is looking at what happens from different type of flooding events and where those vulnerabilities lie. So you can see the town really becomes a series of isolated islands and such.
Sure. Absolutely.
Ms. Repick, a question. You said 10 feet.
Yes, sir.
10 feet above what?
Above mean high. So our normal high tide is what we call a 6-foot tide. That's the current number that we use, and that's what's under review right now. Is that our normal? But this is what we start to look at when we have hurricane events. So it does depend on what the tide is when the hurricane comes in as to what this actually looks like.
10 feet above the 5 feet?
Yes, sir.
10 feet including the
5 feet? The 5 feet is our baseline, so 10 feet on top of that. Yes, sir.
Can I ask a question also? I would assume that whoever produced that map, there are some that go out 25-year projections from now or even maybe even more. Should we be looking at those to get a little more scared?
We're going to talk about what sort of the sea level rise component.
Okay.
So this is what happens ideally if a hurricane is anticipated to come in around Edisto Beach and pushing floodwaters up. We were predicting actually this type of scenario with Hurricane Dorian this past fall, this was the prediction level we were working at. So as we're working in the EOC and looking at where are we going to have people in danger, that is our ability to respond and react, and then the ability to adapt is what we're going to do in the long term. But this is just a hurricane storm surge.
Okay.
Has no sea level rise component right. in it. But all of our flood maps for the area are based upon that storm surge vulnerability, so all of our FEMA flood maps. Our next one is tidal vulnerability, so what happens with sea level rise and what how that begins to impact our existing systems, and then when you lay on top of it those hurricanes. FEMA has asked us to look into the future and anticipate, it's actually a 3.9 level rise in tides over the next 40 plus years. So this is a viewer we get from NOAA, and we put on top of a normal high tide what happens if you add 4 feet every day high tide, and you start to see where the new high tide levels start to push in on a lot of our land. And the vulnerability here is what happens when we have rainfall and our water can no longer get out of the system during these tides. And that is one of the things that we want to work on in the future for mapping and understanding those vulnerabilities. On a day-to-day basis, we have short-term sort of disruptive events. What are the things that interrupt our everyday lives and our operations? We work with construction defects and issues, making sure that the systems that we're building today are built well and will last us for a long time. But we have a lot of issues with prior build of especially our stormwater infrastructure. So we have a pretty strong inspection and acceptance program nowadays. Tidal inundation. In September, this past September, we actually had a normal high tide for us is between 5.5 to 6 feet is the number we use. We were above 7 feet for an entire month. So very unusual for us, and it definitely impacted our response for places like Long Point Road and areas where they're sensitive to those tide levels. Rain bombs. All of our stormwater systems are designed to take a certain amount of rainfall over 24 hours. And recently we've been seeing rain events where we have 4 inches of rain in 2 hours. And we see kind of gross flooding, the rain stops, and whether or not the water goes away is something we're looking at. And then environmental issues that come with those flooding problems. So we do have system maintenance. Our crews are out cleaning storm drains throughout the town, working on our pollution prevention, our emergency response activities, working with our capital improvements, but also educating the public. So does the public understand what is flooding? What is sunny day flooding? What is a very intensive rain event and something that's not normal versus an expected type of flooding? So if you have a puddle in front of your house, is that really flooding, or is it water in your house, and how we define those things? Long term, and I think this is that resiliency piece where you're looking ahead and trying to look at your design standards and how your town is going to function long term, is these changes in rainfall patterns that we're seeing, is it a cycle or is it an actual change? For South Carolina, we are expected to have more intense, more heavier rainfall coming in over the next 40 plus years. So our systems have to function differently. Larger, more intensive hurricanes, so more Category 3 hurricanes, looking at the impact of sea level rise. We also look at other hazards. What happens if we have an earthquake and all of our infrastructure falls apart? How do we then deal with the rainfall and other things after that? Economic forces, paying for infrastructure improvements, paying for the maintenance. We have turns in the economy and how we make sure we're making some good decisions and things that are manageable going forward. And then public perceptions. We have a lot of new people living in our area who've never heard of a hurricane before, don't understand storm surge, and making sure that they're getting the good information that they can help protect them in the future. And we kind of use partnerships and some building some of those public resiliency to help us. You've heard a lot about, we've been talking about comprehensive plans and other things. We use both the comprehensive plan and strategic plans and operational plans and things to guide us. The town has a hazard mitigation plan that we update every year, and we're partnered in with the county, then we readopt that every 5 years. And then those drive our programs. So water quality, asset management, and capital improvements, and trying to build those programs together. And then whether you want to have a separate resiliency plan, and then I'm going to cover a repetitive loss plan that's a part of our ongoing upcoming operations. So currently, we manage some of our flood risks through FEMA, through the community rating system, through the actions that you see on this side, public information, mapping, drainage system maintenance, and warning systems. The town is able to be scored by FEMA. It's a type of accreditation, and our residents who have flood insurance actually receive up to a 20% discount in their flood insurance. And that's generally more than what they pay in their stormwater fees. But those activities help us to protect and be ready for our current events. Our insured losses since 1978 are over $15 million in insured flood losses from prior events. Most of those are from Hurricane Hugo. Until we hit 2015, we actually had 21 what we call repetitive loss homes. Those are homes that have flood insurance and have had significant damage claims, two of them. They go on a special list. We're currently up to 49 homes. And through this program, when we hit 50, we're actually required as a part of the program to develop a plan and a program to address trying to reduce these home damage loss numbers. So that's something that's on the near horizon for us. So how do we get there? We take the plans. The plans guide us into our code of ordinances. We use a lot of outside standards and specifications to drive quality and programs and resiliency into our activities. Plan review with the planning department and our development review team, our inspectors, while things are going in to make sure they're according to plans and our acceptance processes, and then performing the maintenance and rehabilitation and improvement are all ways that we're working to be able to adapt and be ready for these type of flood events. We have a lot of resources at our hand. Our town departments working with emergency management, planning department. We have a coastal stormwater group on a staff level. We actually meet with stormwater managers from Georgetown and Buford and Bluffton and looking at our coastal issues to make sure we're all in the same wavelength. There was just a regional stormwater committee stood up by the COG, and we had our first official meeting, but second meeting with folks who are stormwater managers within the Tri-County area to look at our development standards and our resiliency together. One of our goals is to see if we can collectively apply for some different types of grants. So is it an economic development grant or something that we can build resiliency into our community? There's not a whole lot of money for stormwater specifically. So how do we find money to build into our community the ability to either be prepared for an event or recover quickly? The County Hazard Mitigation Committee is a standing committee, and they are now building their resiliency committee as well. And they'll have some documents and draft guidelines and action plans coming. And then internally, staff's a part of a state association and a regional association, and we've got a lot of stakeholders of different agencies working with us. You've seen earlier, we have a lot of different ordinances that come together for stormwater. So what does a chapter on nuisances have to do with stormwater? Wells and cisterns are something that we now manage and look at for green infrastructure. A way to manage stormwater is in that chapter. So we're working with planning department, the police department, different parts of public services, and our emergency management to all kind of take care of stormwater issues together. I was asked to talk a little bit about green infrastructure. So green infrastructure is our tools that we use in several different development practices. And they are tools that instead of, while stormwater ponds are a part of the infrastructure, these are other types of development tools that help us to manage water. And the goal is to actually mimic nature as much as possible and then create habitat within these systems. So you get cleaner air, cleaner water, but they're a stormwater management tool that is we're hearing about more frequently, but we also see on different projects. We have standards and specifications for these tools. So we have the South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control has a best management practice manual that provides standards and specifications for design, construction, and maintenance. And then the low impact development manual for coastal South Carolina, which also provides those tools to help us get those systems into our and encourage them for use in our development projects. And some of those tools that help build in that resiliency are on your left side. So it includes urban tree canopies, land conservation, looking at how we build our streets and roadways, and some of the different systems. And the good news is we're actually seeing these tools in being used in projects throughout town. So we are even here at Town Hall with our green roof and our biosystems that we've turned a parking lot into something where we're infiltrating the water and reducing the potential for flood damage and for water quality improvements that are a part of those projects. So these elements have been tied back into the comprehensive plan. The goal is to help us look at them holistically with all of our other departments and participants and find places either in guidance or in regulation to build into our town the ability to adapt and respond to the future and recover from those events as economically and as quickly as possible. So these are some of the sections that are referenced. We've recently been working on a couple of projects. So our SNE Farm project, we included in that project scope two flood improvement projects. Those are complete. We added five water quality and water quantity control systems. Those are complete. The pipe lining, this is our failing pipes that are aging and falling apart. We've been lining pipes. Those are almost complete. Got a few things to button up there. But the important part is the community still has flooding issues. So we're not fixing everything. We're fixing sort of the worst pieces and parts. And as sea level rise changes or we see changes in rainfall pattern, those things that are still issues may still pop up. And we still have lots of other pieces and parts of the neighborhood that will be a part of our comprehensive maintenance program in the future to rehabilitate those damaged pipes. And then the Old Village project, we talked about some of this funding. We are working through the final parts of permitting. And we have received some funding through the DOT, or at least some promises for up to 17% in the Royal Basin and 20% in the Edwards Basin. And they have indicated that that has a time frame, so they won't hold the money forever, but they will have it for us if we move in the near future. And then the number for FEMA, we're actually applying for $12.65 million from a FEMA grant. That application is submitted. It is competitive with the rest of the country that has flooding issues. So those are some of the tools in our bucket as we're trying to improve our infrastructure so those areas can be responsive to flooding events specifically. And I know those were my homework assignments just to kind of get you going and give you a framework for your future discussions and considerations.
Any comments, sir?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair. DOT in their flood resilience program statewide talked about cleaning existing ditches, cleaning pipes. Is the money that they've made available to us for the Royal and Edwards basins available for them or included by them to do just that?
This is money just for the improvement project. It does not cover the general maintenance, which I think is a part of our current problem, is just the maintenance of the existing systems. They are coming in. They'll be cleaning Long Point Road, I believe, in the next sort of 2 weeks. And we've asked them for Mathis Ferry Road and some other areas. But it is a different set of money.
Well, what about the Royal and Edwards basins.
Yes, sir. So that money is a part of a fund that they have set aside. They gave us a similar stipulation of money for the last set of Old Village improvements. So they won't pay for all of the infrastructure improvements on their roadways, but this is a contribution. But it's a, I believe it's a different pot of money than that.
Well, that didn't answer my question.
Okay.
Maintenance. Cleaning ditches. Mm-hmm. Cleaning pipes.
Yes, sir.
Can they not come in and start doing that in Royal and Edwards basins?
They could, yes, sir. The committee meeting that I go to, there's a task force that I attend. They have not received significant requests for those areas. We've been focusing them on some of the more transportation networks, the Long Point Road, Mathis Ferry Road, and kind of collector street areas, but that's certainly something we can request of them.
Well, I would do that because maybe that lessens our dollar amount
for what we need.
To help what we need.
That this is definitely the systems in these basins were part of our study, came in at a less than 1 year storm capacity, and the project itself is to bring up the capacity of the system. So it would definitely take care of some of the nuisance areas. What they would have to do is reconstruct drainage ditches through their road systems and work on cleaning them out. But we do that, we deal with them on a more so a complaint driven basis than a focused area basin, but more than happy to do that.
Well, I'm just mentioning it because in the governor's program for flood resiliency, that was their big ticket item, going and cleaning ditches, going and cleaning the pipes out. So maybe we could get them started on Royal and Edwards and then, you know, finish up with adding additional capacity. And maybe while they're out there, they might be adding some additional capacity with some of the equipment they have. So
yes,
I just mentioned that because in the book I gave to Mr. Mitchell, that was their big ticket item statewide for the governor's program. So let's get them to help us do that too.
Okay.
Not yet. We've 8 more minutes. So this is a new committee.
Yes, sir.
And I would like to hear from you or Eric, what you would like to see us as a council do to help you with the work in this committee. I mean, is it ordinance related? Is it what can we do to make your life a little bit easier in the bureaucracy of getting these things through? I probably shouldn't have asked you. But Eric should have the heat.
No, so. It's fine. I'm grateful. Thank you for the committee. I think that we need to be stronger in a resilience perspective beyond flooding. I mean, this is the world we live in today.
Yeah.
So the idea that we've moved forward and established a standing committee to deal with this is great. I do see, and I hope you're comfortable with this, is that depending on the topic from month to month or when the committee meets, it may not just be flood related.
Yeah.
And so I think what we'll have is, depending on the specific topic, you might see a different person up here. It could be Amanda for an emergency management, resilient type subject. Could be Kevin Mitchell on something. So you're going to see
But as to not confuse the public or the agenda, should we change the name of the committee?
Well, I think, you know, the mayor brought up some excellent points as to why the specific name was important. He believed it was important to show to bond raters and others that were taking flooding in particular seriously. So I will yield to him and to y'all on that. But I think the idea of addressing resiliency overall is the best path
forward. It's all related. So,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, I get that.
I think you'll see through the COG committee that we're standing up and perhaps some of the governor's initiatives that the drive is to bring the focus in and seek grant funding and solutions together as a group. So supporting those types of activities, and we have certainly some other resources that are occurring both in our region with the county and the city working on these similar plans that you may find benefit with those, and then the items that we're rolling into the comp plan as well that will allow staff to go to work and take a deep dive on those items.
I love it. I'm glad we're doing it. flooding is, it's big. We don't rank all of our problems, but if we did, it would be way up there at the top. And it'll help me, no matter how many people are with me, but it'll help me with talking about the importance for funding of this. At the end of the day, if we don't have money, we can have all the meetings we want, but we've got to be able to fund this. And the fact that the mayor has made this a priority, hopefully we'll let that get to the top of the funding list as well. Anything else, sir?
No, sir. I think it's a good start.
All right.
There's no question we needed to have this committee, and I think we'll get great things out of it.
Yeah, I knew that took a lot of work. Did all the council members, even those not on the committee, get the presentation?
It was shared with the package, yes, sir.
All right, good. Thank you. It's embarrassing that I asked that, but that's me. Okay, so meeting is adjourned. Thank you.